Welcome to the DL.
In the 553 episodes that we've done on this show, there has been one that, for some odd reason, crushed on downloads. And that episode was Josh Elliott from ESPN. So while I had time, I needed to make sure he got on here to help us get people to watch or listen to the last few. How are you? It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I'm just glad I didn't sink the franchise. To hear that is wondrous news. I just want to clip and save that so I have it for my bosses to prove that, I don't know, at least somebody had a passing interest in something I had to say once.
I think it was a perfect storm for me. One, Deadspin linked to it. And speaking of Deadspin, AJ Delario is going to be on in a little bit. So one, Deadspin linked to it. And two, you mentioned it on SportsCenter in the middle of the blog buzz that you guys did at that time. And I think instantly 10,000 people said, what the hell is on the DL podcast? And they found you on there and said, well, heck, I'll listen to this. It was incredible. It was an absolute firestorm, and I should have had you on monthly after that.
You know, blog buzz, it's interesting to hear you say that. It kind of takes me back. It's been an interesting, frankly, with everything kind of going on with me, it's been an interesting, opportunity to look back, especially on the almost 3 years now of the show, and to see, what the landscape was like when we arrived and the reasons, I think, why in part ESPN as an institution made the decision that they had to go live in the mornings, and just to see how rapidly the online landscape has changed just over those 3 years has been, it's been a remarkable thing to see. And, the blog buzz when we tried to find new ways to incorporate the blogosphere at every turn. And, I think it even proved to be more than we thought.
What's interesting about that? I mean, Twitter existed back then, but not to the point that it was now. And you're on Twitter too now. I mean, it took you the longest time of anyone, I think, in the world to get on Twitter. But it's really interesting that the blog buzz was ESPN's way of reaching out and be like, hey, look, we acknowledge that you exist, even if we don't necessarily. I mean, let me word it this way. I know you still work at ESPN, and we'll get to where you're going next. None of us ever believed that those were the things that were the most buzzed about. And it was a coworker of yours that had a very famous issue that I think eventually blew up the blog buzz, because we spent more time at that juncture in time talking about ESPN on sports blogs than anything else combined. And ESPN sort of never ended up in the blog buzz. It was always funny to us.
Well, and I will say again, at the at one of the first the blogger conferences, that as a family friendly show, I'm not even sure if I should say it out loud, but I actually got to meet the blog buzz people. There was an actual company with whom ESPN contracted. I believe they were set up in North Carolina, and they actually, by whatever metric they used, there was in fact, I guess, some quantitative way to track based on, again, a certain number of criteria that I think was always sort of hazy. And right. To your point, it was always interesting. It was something we would joke about even, in the halls, that it seemed as though if we were actually doing some raw take on blog buzz, that it was going to be ESPN this, ESPN that, ESPN this, ESPN that. And that's sort of a snapshot, I think, of this dance that the company danced with the blogosphere, especially when I think, again, people looked at it as this lawless electronic frontier. And,
right.
If in part we went live in the mornings acknowledging that the news cycle had changed, certainly with a push from the burgeoning blogosphere, I also think that the idea, even then, of this lawless electronic frontier was quaint. And now I think that has sort of taken care of itself in large measure, because I think blogs started sort of policing themselves. I think there became this accepted collective voice. There was a line. It might not be the lines that rule standard or old school, if you will, journalism, but I still think that, the blogosphere sort of grew up, at least over these 3 years, we're doing the show.
Yeah, this is sort of what we've been talking about all week on the show, and I don't even know how much it grew up as it became something different than it was. I think it's all the same people. So I guess the word grew up is okay, and we always go back to that thing that Jason McIntyre from The Big Lead said a couple years ago, I guess blogs need to grow up, and everyone crushed him for it. And I think at the time, I don't want to say he's right because we don't get along, but maybe he was right in the sense that everyone needed to grow up if they wanted to line their pockets with corporate money. And maybe he was the one that saw that first. Look, Deadspin is part of Gawker Media. They are still the most, oddly enough, Gawker Media is the most independent of all voices right now. Because if you're at another major site, it's owned by Yard Barker, which is owned by Fox now. It's owned by Big Lead Sports, which had some fantasy sports ventures, which claims that they're as big as Yahoo and ESPN. It has Yahoo, or it has Comcast, and SB Nation is owned by, it has Comcast money and eventually should become part of that within the next 2 or 3 years. So everybody is corporately owned. So I guess grew up is the right term. I wish there was a better one for it.
I think to your point, because, even as I said it, there is a very, patting the blogosphere on the head aspect to that. And I'll retract that and go with evolve. I think you're completely right, because this is what I think. It's obviously evolved in the 3 years since we launched our show. And 3 years from now, it's not going to look anything like it does now.
Right.
And that, to me, has always been the great thing about the blogosphere. And it was, in fact, look, Deadwood was a phenomenal show. There's nothing wrong with Lawless Frontiers. There's, they somehow, not so much as police themselves, but they self-correct. Things that just aren't going to work. If some site is just so savage, let's say, or has such an extreme point of view, it will eventually be seen as such. I think that people have come to realize and continue to come to realize how vast and multi-employable the blogosphere can be. It's the last great place where you can kind of do anything.
Right, but at the same time, and this is a conversation that people are probably sick of hearing me say, the opportunities aren't there anymore. The opportunities for someone who is in college to write their own general sports blog and then become Will Leach do not exist anymore, or become Jason McIntyre. They don't exist anymore. You need to know people now. It is a sort of eat or be eaten world because everybody has been tied to corporate interests. And I think that you're right that, Leach always used to say it's a meritocracy. And I still believe that to some extent. But ultimately, I think that's only to correct the market. I don't know who the next great – and I hope there's somebody there. And for 15 minutes, I thought it could be me or some of my friends who tried it as well. It's not going to be me. It's got to be somebody who's younger and much more hungry than I am to break the current mold. Like you said, every mold is there to be broken. In 3 years, something will come up that we'll look at what we see now as sports blogs and be like, oh my God, why didn't I think of that? And maybe it's what Dan Shanoff's doing at Quickish. Maybe it's something like that where it's independent. But I think his ultimate goal is to get bought out by somebody too. So I don't know what that independent voice is. And I don't know if it's possible right now in the last 6 months with all this venture capital being thrown around for a guy in a dorm room to roll up his sleeves and start a blog and make it successful. I just don't know. And maybe that's me giving up and being disenfranchised. But you're looking at it from a corporate perspective too because you work at ESPN still. So, I mean, it's maybe we're not the ones to have this conversation about what's next.
Well, and I think to that point, if everything will then be reactionary, there's going to be something that does come along that we all suddenly think, wow, why didn't I think of that? I think there's always the lag time between, so something comes along and it's revolutionary or it turns commonly held perceptions on their collective head, and then I think the danger becomes how many then people chase that exact same thing. It's sort of, we just saw it with Lost. Great show, in part because it attempted to do something that nobody on network television was doing. And so then how many faux Lost attempts did we see come and go, tried and fail?
Right.
You know, that's, it's people rush to fill the void. And you know, you see it in every creative medium, and I think that there will be something that's going to come along. I just also wonder if it won't be, I wonder how much more perhaps envelope pushing there is to be done, at least in the sports media landscape. But again, I say that, and guess what? Tomorrow, somebody at Deadspin or the Big League or somewhere is going to do something, and they'd be like, oh, yeah. I mean, for instance, and you mentioned Twitter, and yes, I was absolutely the last one dragged to Twitter, in part because, you know, I would say to Hannah day in, day out, like, you know, they don't, America doesn't care what I have to say. They have to listen to me 3 hours a day. They don't want to find out what idle thought runs through my head while I'm, you know, cooking dinner for my daughter. But I will say this. I'm on the Twitter there just a couple weeks ago, and, you know, just for people who are outside of New York City who didn't see the news, so a cobra escapes, or so they thought, from the Bronx Zoo.
Right.
And, you know, it was lost for 4 days. They didn't know where a cobra was. And somebody jumped on Twitter and created the Bronx Zoo Cobra. And the Bronx Zoo Cobra started tweeting from all over Manhattan. And I remember sitting with my friends thinking, this is what Twitter can be.
200,000 followers in a week.
In a week. And I got to tell you, I remember I jumped on at about 5,000 followers that afternoon. I checked back in like 3 hours, and it was past 30,000. I mean, it was Sheen-like. And so you think to yourself, like, oh, I see. You know, Charlie Sheen can go out there and attempt to destroy his career on Twitter. The Bronx Zoo Cobra can go out and just have this meta take on what it is we're looking for out of Twitter. And, you know, I still go back. I'll never forget the first time a few years ago now that I jumped onto Twitter. We were doing a story. We'd gotten this news story had come through the ESPN news desk about Shaquille O'Neal when he was a Sun, you know, sitting in a diner, and he was using this new thing that was sort of like Facebook, but it's quicker, as it was explained to us, to give away tickets. And it was called Twitter. And if you were on it, and the first person to find him in the corner seat at this diner would get the tickets. And so, you know, I got on simply because you had to sort of register an account just to see what it was. And I remember thinking, as, you know, with everything else, like, really? Who's really going to use this? And it turns out millions and millions of people.
But you know what? It's interesting because maybe I come from a different perspective on this, because for me, I use it more for what I write is just ridiculous. But when I use it for consumption, it's more for news purposes. It's more to see what else is going on. I don't have a dedicated RSS reader that I follow all the time. I just follow Twitter, and I'll catch as much as I have to. I hope. I've done a pretty good job over the last few years with that. I remember, and to sort of peel back the curtain, the greatest thing about you is that while you're doing SportsCenter, you are also on a computer, and people can see you typing on the computer. I've always wanted to try and send you an instant message that then shows up on SportsCenter, but you are very quick with closing windows. But I sent you something one time during a show that was breaking news, and it was something that the ESPN news desk did not have. It was an international soccer something happened. Someone got hurt. I believe someone broke, a pretty famous player broke a leg or something. And it was before the World Cup, and it had just broken in foreign languages. And I'm sending you stuff, and you're like, idiot, this is in Spanish. I mean, that's Twitter to me. You're on television. You're on television. I'm at my desk, and I'm sending you things in Spanish and trying to get Google Translator so you can get it verified by the news desk. Eventually, you guys got the information, obviously. But it's fascinating to me that news can almost work backwards, that we can send stuff to you as you're on the television news.
You know what? And, you know, it begs now, you know, Twitter, you can see it's going to be Twitter's show. And it'll just be, yeah, it'll just be a host out there reading tweets. I mean,
It's called CNN.
Exactly. I mean, it's interesting, too, that now, you know, we look for different ways to package the news and to bring it. And, you know, not only does Twitter allow for instant either rebuttals or verification, a la the Terrell Pryor story just from yesterday that he was considering the supplemental draft, and nope, he's, you know, let's say he's just sitting there, you know, watching a TV show and it's in commercial, he can just say, nope, folks, I'll see you in Lincoln, and that's it. And that used to be Ohio State drafting a response officially from the athletic department that Terrell Pryor, in fact, has made no commitment to end. I mean, it is, if journalism is the rough draft of history, this is the you know, this is the alphabet letter block that my 2.5-year-old plays with in history. It is quite literally as, perhaps as quick as it could be, to the point, as you just pointed out, it now works in reverse. It's like being nostalgic for something that hasn't happened yet.
Exactly. No, that's a great way to, that is a great way to put it. And it's a good transition, by the way, to go from what you're doing now, which is hosting SportsCenter in the Morning with Hannah Storm, to what you're doing soon, which is leaving sports to go be a stuffed shirt on the morning news. Congratulations to you. You are going to be the news voice, the I read Twitter and then tell you what I just read of Good Morning America. I want to say formally congratulations to you.
This is correct. And thank you, Dan. It is, I will say, it's when I got the offer, I was it was stunning, and I do just want to say it has been a job that is ably filled by Juju Chang. She's terrific and has been terrific for well over a year now. And when they made their last sort of significant shakeup, when they added George Stephanopoulos to the stable, she arrived along with him, and I am. You know, I remember the first time I did SportsCenter. I'll never forget it. I went out there and I did a 6 p.m. SportsCenter one random afternoon with Mike Greenberg, in fact. And I remember informing him that this was, in fact, going to be the first SportsCenter I'd ever done. I could watch the blood slowly drain from his face. And I remember the first time I actually said, "Hi, I'm Josh Elliott. Welcome to SportsCenter." Just how strange that sounded. I got a couple of texts from my friends during the show saying, you know, you should be on the couch watching this with us, not doing it. And, you know, it's that feeling all over again. To actually now take a tiny little place in another iconic franchise in this business is a staggering thing. I can tell you I have yet to wrap my head around it. I have no idea what to expect. It'll be the first time in over a decade that the sports world is not my professional home as well. And, you know, I've always said, first at Sports Illustrated and then here at ESPN, you know, I haven't felt like I had a job for over a decade now. I've been incredibly lucky to really not know what professional stress really was. I had the stresses of the job, but you know, frankly, I still was doing something that beat actually working for a living. And now, you know, I've always been a news junkie. I've always been up on the news, and I've always remained sort of aware of pop culture and everything that it entailed. But now, to take this jump, it's kind of stunning to talk about it. This is really the first time I've really ever talked about it. And I am flabbergasted. I wake up every day, frankly, with cold sweats. I think that's a good thing. As much as anything, to feel that lump in your throat, to feel your mouth get dry, your palms start to sweat, and you think, okay, you can do this. You're a journalist, and I've always considered myself a journalist and a writer, even as I had my face painted every morning to go to my work. But I am stunned by it and deeply grateful to everybody with whom I worked at ESPN who made this possible, and deeply grateful to all the folks at ABC and ABC News, Ben Sherwood, chief among them, who have really taken this step and put their faith in me. And I just hope I, again, don't sink this franchise.
No, come on. Look, I mean, and I know half that stuff is probably in your contract that you have to say whenever you talk about this job. But I want to get to what you're actually going to be doing in a second. But before that, you have rewritten. We talk about how people are going to rewrite the blog world. You have rewritten the path to morning news. And I look at it this way. It is get a writing gig at a place like Sports Illustrated. Be incredibly handsome. Parlay sports and handsomeness and some hair gel into a gig on SportsCenter, read the news, and then news is news. And now you're going to be doing the actual news and not the sports news. So I mean, congratulations for that. If everyone else at Sports Illustrated, and trust me, I know some of those guys, nowhere near handsome enough to get on morning news. But it's a good model for them to aspire to.
It's funny, you know, this is what I can say. Sometimes people will have me, you know, want to come talk to their group, to their class. I was at Columbia before I got my job at Sports Illustrated, and occasionally over the years they've asked me back to speak to, you know, various groups as a student. And I'm always very quick to point out, it doesn't always happen this way. It certainly is a curious way to go. I went to Columbia because I really wanted to get a job at Sports Illustrated. And I knew that it was either, you know, go grab a job in newspapers, if people remember what those are, back in the day, and work your way up. And that is an absolute joke because that's a great deal, my friend.
Because nobody remembers. Because nobody remembers what newspapers are anymore.
Come on. No, but it was either be in newspapers for 20 years and get the call, or every now and again, I did my research that, you know, SI every now and again would give a graduate out of the journalism school there a shot. And so, you know, I felt like I didn't have 20 years to spend. And so I applied to Columbia, lucky enough to get in, and it really paid off. And it's a story I've told elsewhere, but Seth Davis of SI and CBS happened to be taking a 3-month leave of absence to go write a book the summer that I had just graduated from Columbia. And so they basically said, hey, look, you can have a job, but it's not a job. It's never going to turn into a full-time job. So we don't want you to think that will happen. But if you want this gig, you know, we'd love to have you. And I showed up to work quite literally 17 straight days. And they finally, on the 17th day, Richard Dimack, the chief reporters, came into my office and said, all right, fine. You can have a job. Just go home. Just please take a break. And so, and then from there, it was great. And, you know, I was lucky. I had my dream job. And it remained a dream job until, you know, a couple TV spots came up that were available that just weren't the right jobs to leave SI for. And then when ESPN and the dearly departed Class Now came along, it felt to me like, okay, this is something I'm actually willing to go now into this strange new world to try. And again, it was a great run both at Classic Now, but then, you know, 5 years in Bristol. And when the new show came along to go live in the mornings 3 years ago, I remember thinking, you know, there's a 3-word question that has been sort of a guiding principle for me professionally. And it is, why not me? And I think I've always been willing to at least indulge that thought. To, if not want to say things necessarily out loud, at least privately think to myself, well, somebody's got to write a cover story at Sports Illustrated. Right, why not me? And somebody's going to anchor SportsCenter. Why not me? And you just keep wondering, is it, you know, what's, you know, to continue to aspire even privately, it feels really indulgent. And then all of a sudden, you know, an opportunity like this one to go to Good Morning America comes along, and you start thinking, you know, I'd be truncating the quote, but, and it's unfortunate given the character in the movie who said it, but the William Hurt character in Broadcast News, I believe, says it to Holly Hunter at one point in the movie, you know, what happens when your life exceeds your dreams? And there's no better way to describe my life right now.
All right, listen, Elliot. You got to keep in mind that you are the second to last show before I quit what I'm doing. Your success is making me more depressed. I'm sorry to make this about me.
Stop. Dan, no. This was a necessary part of the zeitgeist. And it always happens.
As much as everyone gives me crap for making everything about me, I am not making your turn to Good Morning America anything about me. But very, very quickly, can you explain what you're going to do? Because look, I know some morning news people. Can I tell you a funny story? I'm in Wegmans the other day, and a woman comes up to me. This is an honest to God truth, and this is after I found out you were going to Good Morning America. Woman comes up to me, and I'm buying organic bananas for my daughter. And a woman comes up to me and says, I hate to butt in here, but I wouldn't feel right if I didn't say something. Do you know you shouldn't buy organic bananas unless you're going to use the skins for anything? Because whatever they spray on the regular bananas doesn't penetrate the skin of the banana. So what you're eating inside, you're wasting money. And I looked at her, I said, I appreciate your thought, but you're talking about a difference of 20 cents. I'm buying like a pound of bananas. I mean, you're talking 20 cents difference. She goes, well, that 20 cents adds up. And we get into a whole conversation about forever stamps and how I wanted to buy like a million forever stamps now. But if you do the math over the course of your life, you save like 20 bucks. So her husband says to me, now her husband's chiming and yelling at me for buying organic bananas for my daughter. If I found $20 on the street, I'd pick it up. You got to learn the value of a dollar. So I say to her, I was like, you know, I appreciate where you're telling me this, but how am I verifying this information? She goes, oh, I heard experts talk about it. There were people on the morning news. And that's where I stopped her and said, the morning news? You heard this on the morning news? She goes, oh, yeah. I go, they're terrible people. The people on the morning news are terrible people. And I was like, thank you for your time. And I walked because I was at Rutgers during the Don Imus situation. Josh, the people on the morning news are terrible people. I'm scared for you. Are you going to become one of them?
Okay, well, number one, you know, I'd argue I've been one of them now for a few years at least, and I'd like to think we're not all terrible. And
oh, you're doing sports. Come on, that's
but
fun.
To your point, I mean, listen, morning news, if in fact what you're saying is there has to be a broad appeal. You're not, you know, you have to sort of be all things to all people. So you have to, you know, I've always said, I think I felt like getting to a place like Good Morning America would be good for me, if only because I am equally interested in interviewing a world leader and learning how to make a perfect omelet. To me, they are equally stimulating. I want to know why Gaddafi is killing his own people, and I want to know why, you know, if it's egg whites, you know, how do you keep it from burning? So that's how I happen to be wired, and thankfully there's this, you know, clearinghouse, or this, frankly, you know, this sieve that's catching all the detritus before it goes into your pipes. That's where I'm landing. I mean, it's a good place, I think, for me to land. At GMA right now, I'm what's called the news reader. If you want to dress it up a bit, you can call it the news anchor. But essentially, when the show starts, there's Robin Roberts, who I need to actually give special credit to for blazing this trail, being the first person to jump from ESPN to GMA. If she hadn't done it and done it incredibly well, then nobody's going to get the shot. And so when it opens with Robin and George, they rip through usually, you know, the hardest news of the day in the first half hour or so. And then when they turn, okay, now with more news on the day, and they welcome me. And so that's my role. In the first hour or so, it's usually providing a news update, and if something, let's say, like the disaster in Japan hits, and it's sort of all hands on deck in the newsroom, well, then theoretically, I'm going to be looking to crash a piece that can contribute to that reporting as well. And then in the second hour, which is where things tend to be a little lighter, I'll do another news hit at the top of the show, and then I think it's sort of, let's find out what else to do. If there are segments to do, terrific. If there are interviews to be done, that's great. And I know, just in speaking with my soon-to-be new bosses at ABC, you know, I think there's also going to be a let's go find out what else we can do. And that, for me, is going to be the most thrilling thing of all. You know, I personally am, of course, nothing's ever good. I have to find the bad in everything, so I've got to figure out a way to be dissatisfied already with the job I haven't even begun yet. And when I've accomplished that, I'll be sure to let everybody know. But for now, I am, unfortunately, I think one of those, like, stupid, blindly, dumbly lucky people who have gone from dream gig to dream gig to now a third dream gig.
I am going to, and I make this promise, watch as many days in a row as I can until you have to say, and I think it already happened, so maybe you won't have to say this, Britney Spears live on Friday.
Oh,
and I'm gonna twit vid the hell out of that.
All right, Dan. Well, I mean, look, I did 3 days a couple of weeks ago, and I ironed on national television. I ironed a shirt. So trust me, I'm there. I'm already there. I've blown well past Britney Spears.
And there's the block quote that we can use. Thank you so much. Good. I mean, congratulations. Good luck. Obviously, I hope that you will. I don't know if you'll be able to instant message as much in the time you're over
there. I'll totally be on. And hey, dude, thanks for everything. Seriously, it's like there have been people who've been along for this whole crazy, absurd run from then to now. And I wish I could be hard-bitten and cynical about it. And I just can't. It's like my head is freaking spinning. And it's been an amazing thing, if nothing else, too, because, like, you know, it's not easy to leave ESPN on good terms, and to be able to do that is as much a blessing as anything here for me personally. And to
the ability, everybody should get this professional opportunity. The ability to go to your own funeral like you're Tom Sawyer in the workplace is just an unbelievable thing. It really is. It's a great thing.
What do you think this is? Welcome to my own funeral. Thank you so much. Hang on for 1 second. We cannot end this show, as I was told in an email from him, without having AJ Delario on. How are you, sir?
Good, good. Happy to be back.
It has been a while.
You guys have been busy for the last year and a half and just like completely just ignoring me the whole time.
No, see, that's actually not true. We were going to have you be a big part of the anniversary of the 500th show when we interviewed everyone there, but then at the last minute you weren't there, so I had to throw all my plans out.
Right. Well, you know, I think I've done enough Captain Morgan poses in my life, and I mean, that was pretty much it. That was the deal breaker for me.
It's fine. And I couldn't even get Captain Morgan to show up to the party, sponsored by Captain Morgan. How have you been? How is the internet on your side of the world?
It seems fine. You know, we're in a transitional period. I mean, at this point, and probably you know, there will be bigger things to talk about in the next couple months, I anticipate, just the way things are headed. But it's hard to be vague, but I mean, this has been the stuff that's been taking up most of my time and my think space.
I don't really even know what that means. When has Deadspin? Yeah. When has Gawker not been transitioning to something else? I mean, am I understating what's going on?
You haven't seen the 4D version of the new redesign, so I mean, that's coming out in the next couple months. We're getting rid of comments altogether, and it's basically the commenters will have their own separate site, which they have to sign up for and pay for, and still suffer the same exact kind of unfair ridicule from these anonymous comment ninjas. So it's going to go over really well, and I'm looking forward to that.
We've been doing a lot of that the last couple of days. I mean, when Scholes was on and when Zirkle was on, Zirkle brought it up when I was on his show, and we sort of continue that conversation onto our show on Monday about how different things have been in the last 2 or 3 years. And that's sort of how I thought was the best way to end this. I mean, we've been doing the show for like, I think from day one until day end, it's like 3 years, 6 or 7 months, but we started in late 2007. So for me, it's been a little bit longer of an arc than when you were the head of Deadspin. But for you, let's start from when you took over at Deadspin until now. Leach had that very famous quote of, "You won't recognize Deadspin," and we don't. Right. I mean, physically, you don't recognize Deadspin. But how has it been different over this time for you?
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. I think actually next week or somewhere along those lines, I will have been at Deadspin as editor-in-chief longer than Will was editor-in-chief.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, kind of shows exactly how much time has passed. But yeah, I mean, it's a completely different site. I think the minute he left, when I think that's when you look at what Will's version was, it was pretty much used the center of the universe, and then, you know, now it's not really. I mean, this is you know, a site that's gone from 2 writers to 7 in a rotating cast, and the you know, the increased visibility aside, I mean, the site and the company have changed so dramatically that it's even tough to kind of gauge those two eras and put them against each other, because they're just completely different. And, you know, this is not necessarily everything that I signed up for, but it's been a work in progress the whole time, and will continue to be that way.
You one time, it might have been when we were in Vegas, you sort of got mad at me and said, "Why do you care so much about sort of this blog community?" Like, you almost felt like that idea was something that I had stuck in my head. And I actually sort of agree with you to some extent, that maybe some of us were banging our head against the wall trying to develop a community. Do you feel that it's more like that now, or that it's even that everyone's sort of doing their own thing? And as you mentioned, like, Deadspin has sort of become faceless. I mean, you all have names and we all know who you are. And when you read Tommy Craig's, you know, it's Tommy Craig's, but a lot of times, you know, it's not just one guy at a computer anymore. It's sort of an ongoing machine. And is that everywhere in the blog? Has everyone caught up to what you guys are doing?
I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, you know, the thing was, I never really, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, but I mean, in terms of just, you know, what the sports blogosphere was in terms of the community that Leach had built as opposed to the one I had built, I mean, they're two completely separate things as long as I'm concerned. I mean, I thought it was, I don't really, I never paid attention, I've never used an RSS feed, I've never used anything outside of just, you know, people IMing me stuff in terms of stuff to look at. So the sports blogosphere, in my mind, was something that really didn't exist. You know, I was only judging myself against all the other sites at Gawker more than anything else. So it was, you know, it was kind of amusing slash frustrating, I guess, that, you know, when I first took over Deadspin, that there was this sense that I was betraying some sort of community that I wasn't really aware of that existed. But you've done a great job at wrangling them all up and kind of, you know, stirring up the pot. But I appreciate so, it.
Come on, if I had that much, if I had that much power, I wouldn't be where I am right now.
Fair enough. No, but I get to answer your question. I don't think it's gotten bigger than it was before. I think it's probably a little more substantial, which I think was, you know, the end goal of this. I mean, I don't think that there are things that you can just pass off as being blogs anymore. I mean, a lot of these guys have kind of grown up and, you know, developed their own voice and developed their own audience independent of what everybody else was outside of the sports blogosphere community.
Right, and that's one thing that I want to stress. Look, I mean, I'm stopping the show for my own personal reasons, not because of any other sort of work-related things, but the fact remains, this is what we all sort of wanted in a way. I mean, maybe not the corporate nature of it, because I think everyone sort of gets into subcultures in a counterculture, anti-society, anti-corporate reason. Now, maybe not you, but because, I mean, you came from Philadelphia Magazine and other places like that. But I think most people who were in blogs were doing it because they felt it was a better way than what corporate America was giving them. And now blogs have become corporate America. But to some extent, that's actually a good thing in the sense that they're taking us seriously now. And if you go back 2 or 3 years, I think that's what all we always wanted.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, I think that's shows a lot of just the maturity, and I think of, A, like, you know, the writers that started doing this. But I mean, I think it also is kind of this level of acceptance where oftentimes I think most of the mainstream scolds have realized that nobody's kind of pulling crap out of their ass all the time, and that it's a little antiquated and a little. You sound silly if you kind of just throw that out there just haphazardly about every single blogger that puts up, you know, a post. And that's really great for everybody involved in it. And I think, you know, once you have people that do establish their own identities, then you're going to start to see exactly where they go from there.
I asked Zirkle this the other day because obviously he's leaving With Leather, and With Leather is
– where is he going?
He's just doing his own thing. I don't know. He said he's going to still be posting. He mentioned on the show that he was going to be doing like a movie, like a short movie that he's going to submit to he wouldn't tell me what it was about, but to some film thing in Atlanta. So I think he's just working on other projects, but he seems that this is the right time. Obviously, Scholes felt that closing up Free Darko was the right time. And for me, I mean, this seems to be the only time that I can do this. So maybe I'm not the best person to answer this question. I think you might be. What I asked Josh was, can the general sports blog still work in the idea and in the concept of a With Leather? I don't think that Deadspin is that anymore. So I think you might be better served to answer, because I think you guys have changed what Deadspin is from what it was. But can a general sports blog exist with Twitter constantly putting on information? I think the specialized blogs are always going to exist. But how do you feel about that? Does the general sports blog even exist anymore?
Well, and here's the thing, and I know that they're not the most, you know, popular in terms of a blogger purist type of perception, but Barstool Sports is pretty much kind of the one catch-all site that I see as just like really has a chance to be a lot more impactful than it is right now. Not in terms of just like exactly they're going to change the conversation of sorts, but I think they're kind of more set up to be a college humor type operation.
Right.
Meaning this bigger national type, I think they're going to be kind of the prototype of what people think of in terms of sports blogs for a while. And, you know, disagree with me or not, I mean, that's fine. But it just seems like if there's one site that's capable of kind of capturing a lot of just like all that, you know, all the alternatives, look at it as just like the opposite of SB Nation. You know, what SB Nation kind of does is create this whole entire, you know, alternative sports news agency, and this is this huge aggregator, whereas Barstool Sports, I think, kind of, you know, still taps into the baser instincts of what a lot of the web readers want.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned them, because I, and obviously I've been there and I know where they are, and I've been compiling a list with a couple other people for a sort of final post that I'm doing. It's not even on my radar. And I put at the top of my post, I have like 65, I have 105 bloggers on a list, and I'm narrowing that down to, for something that I'm working on that's like 65, and we'll probably be posting today so people will see it on the site, 65 bloggers. And they weren't even on my radar. And you're telling me that they're the future of the industry. So it's so interesting and how sort of how fickle you find your own pockets. You know, you gravitate towards people that you like, and it's okay if you don't see other people.
Right, and I'm not even saying that I necessarily even like what they do. I mean, I actually don't, but I can just see it from a big picture perspective and really kind of see where things are trending towards, and just like, you know, what has become the polar opposite. It's just in terms of just like where Barstool Sports sits right now, reminds me a lot of where Deadspin used to sit 3 years ago. And I think if you know, he's smart enough to kind of just take that and make that a national brand, which I think is happening naturally anyway, they're going to be tough to stop. And I think there's somebody that's going to be like a huge corporation that will probably eventually snatch them up and kind of develop a whole, you know, another channel devoted to them.
That's fascinating. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because like I said, it's not even on my radar. But it does bring up the point of what you said, what Deadspin was. So what is Deadspin now? Because I don't consider it a regular sports ball. I mean, I almost feel like it's like an investigative slash hit piece slash we sometimes cover. I it's so different than what it was. I don't know what it is.
Well, my whole entire vision was to really just have a place for both the highbrow and lowbrow. This is really kind of the playbook of the Black Table more than anything else, which was to have kind of this place where both we can have 4,000 word essays about something that's completely, you know, this minutia and tangentially related to sports coexist with just the straight up gossip stuff. That's more like meta gossip type things. That's kind of where we are right now. And I think we're going to see more and more that, you know, some of these stories that have kind of become Deadspin stories in their own way, I mean, are starting to kind of at least seep into the mainstream a little bit more. So now it's probably time for me to kind of flip the model around before everybody else catches up. So.
Right, and that brings up the question of pressure. I mean, do you feel – I remember when you first took that job, obviously there was pressure, and then when the Gawker house started to fall and they started selling off some of their blogs, I mean, people looked at the traffic. These were well-reported. Deadspin at that time was one of the lower traffic sites, just in the nature of sports not being as popular as tech and gaming and stuff. But now you guys are at the top, I would think, or close to the top. So is there more pressure now on – I mean, is there more pressure on finding the next Jen Sturger story?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the Jen Sturger story kind of found itself. I mean, just like those stories always exist.
Betrayed by a blogger. I'm sorry.
The reality is, I mean, those types of stories always exist. I mean, we could definitely kind of just set all our sights on Peyton Manning, and I'm sure we can do a big blockbuster Peyton Manning story. But my whole entire thought process after the whole entire Favre phenomenon happened, because it was a 6-month-long story that just seemed to never go away, just like it went throughout the whole entire NFL season. I mean, we can't run away from that, but I'm not going to chase after it either. The success of that story is nothing that can be duplicated by me. Those things, just everything fell in place at the right time. But I'm not going to shy away from those stories if there's something that I really think can get out there and it has a larger issue attached to it as opposed to just the salacious nature of things.
By the way, it brings up an interesting point, and I mentioned this on the show, so for full disclosure purposes, I need to ask you about this. When that happened, when you guys posted that, I sent you a message and said, congratulations on getting the biggest post in the history of the internet, or something like that, on Instant Messenger. You said, I don't know if it's going to be that big. But then and then obviously, I'm not patting myself on the back, but it turned out to be, I think, bigger than any of us thought it would be. The story, at least. When you guys did that story, I want to say, what magazine did that feature on you guys? GQ did the story on you where you were in a in a bathroom stall. You mentioned that it was your Monica Lewinsky. So I just wanted to get the timeline on that right. Were you playing coy with me at the time, which is fine if you were? Did you really think this was going to be as big as it was, or did it exceed your expectations?
Well, look, you also have to understand that conversation where I made that statement was with Nick Denton, who basically had to write me a check for $12,000. So, of course, I'm going to kind of oversell it to him as much as possible.
Okay, but you were right in that. I mean, you were right to him and wrong to me, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a certain level where you can predict that a story is going to be big. And this was clearly one that I thought would do well to a certain level. But, you know, once it became part of the whole entire NFL season, that's not really something that you can predict. I mean, everything broke the exact right way. And by that point, it was completely out of our hands. I mean, there was nothing more that we could add to the story. It was more just kind of just us keeping up with it. And me personally, just trying to kind of almost be Brett Favre's penis's publicity manager. I mean, that's kind of just like what I did for 4 months. And it was, which, you know, we had a lot of success outside of that. But I mean, there's a downside to it. I mean, there was something that, you know, the site was kind of building and growing and moving in another direction. And a lot of that time that I spent kind of focusing on, you know, doing like upholding my end of just like, you know, the bargain in terms of just like, you know, when Nick signed on for kind of, all right, I'm going to pay the $12,000 to get this out there. You have to promise to help it along. That was a little frustrating because, I mean, it does turn into a full-time job on its own.
By the way, I'm so glad that you didn't release the 4D version of Deadspin during the Brett Favre penis saga.
Yeah, you know, that would have been terrible. That would have been terrible. Yeah.
Who is your competition now? I mean, I don't know if you ever thought of it that way, because I mean, I think we all as the community thought of the Big Lead versus Deadspin when Leach was there. And obviously you've publicly and privately, I think, made peace with McIntyre. Many of us haven't, but you have, and you're right, by the way. I mean, we were all petty about it, him included, but you were right in that regard. That being said, I think you've so far outweighed all of the other blogs in what you do. I mean, some of the ESPN sites, some of the Yahoo sites may get close to the traffic that you do, but in different stories. Do you consider the New York Post your competition? Do you consider other sports blogs, or is it just you're on an island?
Yeah, I mean, the only people I compete with are the people that are under the Gawker Media Network. I mean, that's the best way I think to kind of track my personal success, because you know, we're going to get beat on stories. We're going to do some things that, you know, other places are going to do a lot better than we can. And I'm kind of just, you know, conceding a lot of that stuff. But I also know that there are certain things that by virtue of working at Gawker Media, I can kind of do more successfully than other places could. And I have a certain comfort level with those types of stories that I think is just a little bit unique. So as long as I continue to kind of just, you know, do the things that I want to do, I think that's going to be headed in the right direction. But things could shift all the time. I mean, we could be we could completely change to a, I don't know, like something that covers swimming a lot more just because Nick had a conversation at a cocktail party with an ex-Olympian. I mean, those are sometimes, like, that's how the lunacy of his whims kind of works sometimes. So, there's always a target on your back when you work here, but you just kind of just navigate as best as you possibly can.
You lost one of your people to Bill Simmons' new project. How much do you know about this? And what, I mean, Scholes and I talked about it at the end of the show, so we'll sort of end with this. I mean, is this going to change the world, or is this going to, I mean, I assume it's going to be really cool, and I assume it's going to have a lot of money thrown behind it, so it's going to be slickly done. Is this what everyone's sort of been waiting for? Is this the new thing, or is this just going to be the old guard trying to become cool like you?
No, I don't think so. I think it's everything that's, you know, all the hype behind it. I mean, they have a very enviable staff over there, and it's going to continue to get bigger. And, I think that the biggest issue that you're going to find with that site is probably the one that's really obvious as to how much rope ESPN is going to give Bill Simmons to do what he wants. He's had issues with his podcast before. He's had issues with his columns before with, you know, some of the higher ups there. So how far, like, you know, over the Disney line they can actually go, I think remains to be seen. But, you know, other than that, I mean, just the people that he's kind of hiring just at a very, very basic low level are completely, you know, head and shoulders above a lot of people that are out there. I think just by virtue of talent alone, it's going to be something very substantial.
It's fascinating. I mean, the funny thing is I always used to think that it was sort of first come, first serve. Whoever got there first established their footing. But I think that is sort of breaking the mold of you can do something late as long as it's really good. And I think we all try for that, but it's hard for me to do it. But if you have ESPN or Gawker, you know, you can reinvent yourself and be really awesome if you have the right people behind you.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be a lot of the unknown, especially when anybody kind of takes on or joins up with a project like this. I mean, there is a certain level of blue sky that's being sold there, but I really think that Bill Simmons knows exactly where his assets are, and he's going to have the building traffic from his following alone kind of almost propping up all these outstanding writers and just like doing all this great work. It's kind of a formula that seems to be on paper one that will actually be very successful.
It's interesting. And I will end with this. This would be my last question. I'm going to tease our last show, which is weird to even say at this point because I never actually thought I'd get to this point. But in our last show, I have sent an email to many people. You were on that list to ask for a prognostication. What I wrote when Scholes and Zirkle were on is for that day where my mind was, that was the perfect show. And I've always felt that about the show. Like some shows aren't great, but a lot of times when it clicks, that day's show was perfect. The next day, you sound like an asshole. You sound ridiculous. And I think that's, if I listened to the Scholes interview and the one with Zirkle today, I'd feel stupid. Imagine in 2 years. And a friend of mine said, why don't we do that? Why don't we do a time capsule in sports? So the last show is going to be that. And hopefully, we're going to have some really good names in our industry call up and give their prognostications for something that will happen in our industry or in sports over the next 2 years. And if people can go back and listen to the show in 2 years, see if anyone was right. So to put you on the spot to end this, I mean, do you have anything that you think might happen, whether it be with Deadspin or in sports, that'll happen in the next 2 years?
There will be an NFL season in 2012. Mark my words.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, timely and a little smart-assy, but still probably right.
I think you just rewrote the Deadspin, the Deadspin headline. Timely and a little smart-assy. Thank you, by the way. And look, I mean to get a little maudlin for a second, but I would not have done this show as long as I did if it wasn't for your advice. And as I haven't talked to you too much on the show in the last few months, I do appreciate everything that you did for me, both in front of the scenes and behind the scenes.
Well, I appreciate that. And thank you for letting me come on so early and being a part of the show for as often as I have been. That's always been fun.
No problem. I will talk to you at some point, right? You'll still take my calls?
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you. Hang on for 1 second.
All right.